This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
We are getting word here in the last few days, Mark, about the College Football Playoff Committee and some of the things that have happened. Andy Staples, who was with us last week, did a tremendous job reporting on this. Heather Denich, also of ESPN.com, had some things. She covers the CFP exclusively for the networks. And we were kind of into this about, number one, they're talking about expansion. And I know you've got the Packer plan for expansion, which I think is very good.
Thank you.
But I'm not sure there were 62 other scenarios available unless the expansion plan gets beyond eight schools, which apparently it must if you got to 63 total scenarios.
Yeah, this was a hot button topic last week on the radio show. I think it's great, number one. All right, up front, I don't know what's going to happen. I do think it's inevitable that the college football playoff is going to expand. I think college football needs it to. And I know people yell at me and go, hey, Pack, if it's only Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State, none of these other teams can beat them. It's beside the point. You know, you have a tournament, you roll it out there, you see who wins. That's number one. Number two, I think college football is reaching a point where having the same three or four teams every year, it's great for those four teams or five teams, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It's not a very long list. It's great for those teams, whoever you want to include. It's not great for college football. You cannot have a sport in which before you ever get started, a team or a league feels like, well, we got no chance. I mean, that's not healthy. That's not good. There's a lot of money riding on this, right, to make this work. When you start talking about the size of scholarships and facility upgrades and all the stuff that's involved. So you want to have people feel like they're a part of something, whether they can beat a Clemson or a Bama or an Ohio State. That's almost beside the point for now. So when I hear that there's 63 scenarios being discussed, I loved that. When I heard that, I was like, that's brilliant. That's great. Because the smart people, the power people, are having real conversations about, hey, let's go over every single possible scenario, whether that be six teams, up to 16 teams, whatever combination you want, all right? And I will just tell you this, Wes. I asked a question last week on the radio show, and I said I'm going to ask the same question 2 months from now, and I'm going to give you three answers when it comes to the college football playoff. A, we keep it at four. We're good to go. Stays right where it is. B, we change it. And it could be anywhere from 6 to 16. And if you think the answer is B, answer it that way and then tell me what you think the right number should be and why. The answer C was this playoff thing is a disaster. It makes no sense. Let's go back to the good old days where the computers told us who the two best teams were and let's go play. 95% of the people who answered that question last week on the show said B. B. And the number eight teams was the most popular answer. So take that for whatever it's worth.
Right.
Informal poll, radio show. It was a national deal, West Coast, East Coast, calls from all over the place. Not a single person said C. Nobody said the playoff, no, we don't like it. Let's go back to
No.
Not one person.
No, we don't want computers.
C.
No.
So take it for whatever it's worth. So I am encouraged to hear that the quote-unquote power brokers in college football are having real discussions about inevitably what this could turn into. Now, you know, Bill Hancock said, hey, nothing's happening for the next couple of years. Contract is good through 2025 season. So there's time here. But the fact that they're having real conversations, giving that many details of 63 possibilities, to me is a good, positive sign for college football.
All right, I want to expand on that by saying this. I don't have a problem with the expansion if the model presents itself as financially feasible to what the current rate is, right? And I think you and I have both said that before. The only way you're going to get expansion is when the financials also bear that expansion, correct? I think we agree on that, right?
Nothing gets done until something gets sold. How many times have I
sold.
Said that to you?
Right.
100 times?
A lot. Yeah. All right, so here we go. The expansion product, remember there's give and take in this, okay? So everybody wants expansion. 95% of the people who Pac polled on off campus want to see the college football playoff expanded. That's fine. But understand that if you expand it from 4 to 8, 12, 16, 6, whatever the number is, okay, that everybody gets comfortable with, there has to be some concession made in the process by which we get there, okay? Every conference, every major conference is still going to want its championship game. You know that the Pac-12, the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, and the SEC are all going to want to stage those conference games, okay? One of the goals in those conference games would be to get the two best teams in your conference championship game. In the ACC's case, we proved that last year when you take the division walls down, you can get two high-powered football teams in an ACC championship game. Even the Southeastern Conference, who, you know, has had a very entertaining championship game for the most part, there have been years, Pac, where it would have been in their best interest to take the division walls down, correct? Fair? I think so. I mean, there was one year South Carolina played in that thing, and about the time they got off the bus, they were down three scores, right?
Yeah, but they were the best team in the East.
I understand that. But were they the second best team in the league?
No.
Not sure of that. Okay. So understanding that there has to be some concession made. So if your school is made up of divisions, if your conference is made up of divisions, ACC, SEC, you may have to take the division walls down in order to get the best teams ready for the expanded field, because that'll be a critical piece of this. Third part is this. Everybody needs to play the same number of conference games. And yeah, I know the ACC and the SEC play 8. And a lot of other people play 9. The leagues need to play the same number of conference games. Disagree. If I give you the expanded field, which means you're going to get more money, then you might need to play the same number of games to balance the core field of college football going forward.
I disagree.
There has to be some concession for the expansion. I know you do,
but I do believe that
one of those things has to be conceded.
Well, listen, I think every conference has to do what it's in their best interest. The fact that the ACC and the SEC have played 8 conference games is in their best interest. I hear this every year on the radio show. Big Ten fans scream, the SEC ought to play 9. Now, you know what, you guys? Maybe you ought to play 8. You know, the SEC's kind of figured out this football thing. But my point with all this is listen, the ACC is not equal to the SEC, which is not equal to the Big 12, which is not equal to the Pac-12. I mean, in a great, perfect, utopian society, we should all play each other and everybody plays 10 conference games home and home. That's not happening. So I think it's up to each respective league to determine the way they conduct their championship. How the ACC does it is great. How the SEC does it doesn't mean they're the same. You do whatever is in your best interest. What I do think is important, though, Wes, is that everybody who wins your league, however you do it, should have a spot at the table in the Power Five. And that's why I think the number is 8. Mm-hmm. I did this thing called the Pac-Man Plan 3 years ago on radio. It is so easy and so simple. You could still have all your conference championship games. You could still have the first round of the 8 on site. It gives you the incentive for everybody to be either a 1, 2, 3, or 4 seed, because the first round of the playoffs are on your campus. It still would include Army, Navy as a separate animal at the end of the year that they can have their celebration. You could still have everybody who wins a Power Five, your champion is in. The Group of Five's best team is in. And then the committee comes up with the 2 wildcard teams and you go play. I don't think is that difficult. I really don't. But it's not going to get done until the rights holder says, hey, we're in for more money, and everybody can get a bigger slice of the pie there.
Sure. I do believe with the growth, there has to be a concession at some point. The concession could be anything. But I do believe if we're going to go from 4 to 6 to 8 to 12, whatever down the line, there'll have to be a degree of give back somewhere along the way. I just think that that's part of the grind, if you will, of the College Football Playoff Committee. And the way that this gets structured. Here's the other thing, too. We're talking about financials here. And we're talking about number of games, okay? we just saw the National Football League do something. And football and the NFL we all recognize as a business, right, Pac?
Yeah, I'd say.
They went to 17 regular season games and took one of the preseason games away. So the total number for the owners is still 20, just like it was in the old days of 16 and 4 preseason games. So the number is still 20. Remember, we went from 11 to 12, what, in the early 2000s, as I recall? Isn't that when we went to 12 regular season games on a seemingly year-in, year-out basis, right? Aren't we looking at potentially 13 regular season games here before too long? It just feels financially like we might be.
I don't think you'd need to do it. I'm going to go back to what I came up with 3-4 years ago. I think there's a way to do this, and you can still keep basically everything you have intact. I do think double buys are important because it is a long season. I think you can start mm-hmm. the season earlier than Labor Day weekend. I think folks are ready to go for college football in the middle of August. I think you could do that and still apply an open date system where you get one in late August or early September. You get another one in October, early November, and your season still ends like it normally would right around Thanksgiving, and conferences can still have their conference championship game. And then guess what? The first round of the playoffs are going to start on 4 college sites. It's only going to affect 4 teams in terms of, hey, your game day duties, only 4. Now, if you still want to have 4,000 bowl games, hey, knock yourself out. I mean, whatever makes you happy. It doesn't matter to me. You want to put one in Myrtle Beach and want to put one in Topeka, Kansas? Cool. Awesome. You got teams that really to go out there and have a good time, and somebody's ready to write the check, knock yourself out. But I think this college football playoff thing, I think it's inevitable, and I think it's doable.
I do too.
But, you know, I don't think this whole everybody's an equal. Hey, you know, guess what? I mean, I'll give all the credit in the world to the Southeastern Conference. They've got great football. They got passionate fans, you know, 95,000 people showing up every Saturday. Every league in the country should wish they had the passion and the quality of football as they have in the SEC. It's tremendous. It's great. But not everybody can do that. You know what? The Pac-12 is sitting there waving at people going, hey, somebody please watch me. We're not on equal terms. We're not going to be on equal terms. But I do think winning your conference championship should matter. It should matter. And if you want to get in the playoff, to me, the first box you better check is, hey, are you the best team in your league? Yes or no? It better be a yes to be in the playoff, in my opinion.
Yep. Good stuff. We'll get back to more as we move through the offseason on the college football playoff as well. When we come back, the topic we had briefly in hour one, who's the biggest star on your campus? Ooh. QB1 in Miami. Haley Van Lith, a show favorite.
Chester loves Haley Van Lith.
We will come back, talk about that and more. Packer and Durham. Matt Nelson at 8:30 from Florida State Baseball on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. All right, biggest star on campus. We're going to address everybody in the league before we're out of here this morning at 10 a.m. Boston College, we just had their spring game, Wes. Dracovic, Zay Flowers, that's a little combination you're going to get used to. Is Dracovic the answer to the question on the BC campus? Just asking.
I don't know. Is Charlotte North the answer?
She's great. Man, she is really something.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We talked about Clemson, Valerie Cave. These are not as obvious as you often would think when you start talking about it. I tell you, you know, Matthew Nelson that's going to join us. You mentioned Kristen McFarland, Mackenzie Milton at Florida State. How about Georgia Tech? We got a nice tweet, Skylar Doak Davis, who said Jahmyr Gibbs at Georgia Tech. We only got a taste of him a year ago. He's poised for a breakout season, run, catch, return. Another Georgia Tech tweet, Kevin Bailey says, Kevin Parada, the baseball catcher, who, by the way, is having a phenomenal year. Another long lineage of great catchers at Georgia Tech with baseball. So we got, you know, a couple different tweets in that line. All good answers, by the way. I mean, all good answers. You go from Georgia Tech to a place like Louisville, a couple of years ago, Lamar Jackson, layup, right? Donovan Mitchell, he'd have been on that list. Now, is it Haley Van Lith?
It may be.
Friend of the show?
Yeah. It's Chester's favorite player in the league, by the way. Chester loves Haley Van Lith.
Yeah.
You know, because you got to remember now, Dana Evans is on to the WNBA, right? And you look at the men's side, you know, there are going to be some dudes leaving the NBA. So this, to me, you know, I don't know where you go with Louisville. We just had Henry Davis on, the catcher. Again, there's so many great catchers in this league in baseball. Maybe that's the answer. I mean, again, I think this is a hard question. And I'm sure when people heard it for the first time, like, oh, it's easy, man. It's just star quarterback and end of conversation. Not necessarily true. Not necessarily true. It may be Haley Van Lith.
She's got one thing that would be interesting in terms of NIL. She has a tremendous social media following.
No question.
Yeah. That counts. Tyler Elser says Henry Davis of baseball because Henry Davis is going to be a top five pick. Kevin Parada, same thing. Matthew Nelson, same thing. All expected to be very high draft picks. Miami?
Quarterback.
Is it as simple as QB1, Pac?
I think it is. I think it is.
Okay.
Now, I might be 1,000,000,000% wrong and somebody will prove us otherwise, but I would go De'Aaron King as the big man on campus at Miami. Okay. That'd be my guess.
So De'Aaron King, I mean, coming back from an injury, he's got a chance to write a great story. Got a chance to write an unbelievable story. By the way, Canes were an interesting watch in the spring without King. A little bit more, as you said last week, under the hood than I think people thought were there. So
I love their quarterback room. I think they've got some dudes. Now the question's gonna be, like everybody else is trying to figure out, hey, everybody wants to play, right? I mean, this is the delicate balance if you're a coach, regardless if it's a football or something else. If you're going to recruit at a crazy level and bring in a ton of talent, those dudes want to play. Like, they want to play yesterday.
Yep.
Especially quarterback rooms, right? So, to me is just such a hard call for a coach. Yeah, you got to have players, but sometimes you can have too many players where the guy goes, hey, I want to get up and go. I mean, it's like the Clemson running back room yesterday. They lost a player in the transfer portal and Malusi, who I think is a really good guy. I mean, I think he can play. But, you know, you want touches. You want to be able to say, guess what? Give me the rock. I can lead somebody to W. So that's a delicate balance for a coach in this day and age of the transfer portal where folks are getting up and leaving overnight. And you got to recruit at a crazy level, and then you got to keep everybody happy at a crazy level. I mean, that's why people are getting paid a lot of money to be coaches in this day and age. But as far as the big man on campus or who's the biggest star, I think down in Coral Gables – Wes, I think you have to go with De'Aaron King. I think that's – I'm trying to think of all the sports down there. Baseball has been kind of up and down. You know, they can get hot, then they get cold. They're kind of strange to figure out. But I think De'Aaron King's your answer at Miami.
All right. How about North Carolina? Answer is easy there too, huh?
Well, I think your QB's your man now. I do. I mean, I think the guy that's going to be a conversation piece for the Heisman, it's got to be Sam Howell. Has to be.
Logan Bolton sent us a tweet. Use the hashtag Packer and Durham. He thinks so.
Yeah, I mean.
Logan said, Sam Howell's obvious in 2 years already the greatest quarterback in Carolina history. He said, Tony Grimes gets honorable mention, though. Gained a lot of fanfare from his true freshman season.
No, he Grimes.
That's what Logan says.
I get that. Grimes going to be a good player. Sam Howell is a national conversation. Sam Howell is when you start talking to people around the country about, hey, give me a list of your top five quarterbacks going into the 21 season, Sam's name pops up. And, I mean, it's almost a given in that conversation. Tony Grimes is going to be a really, really good player. But Sam Howell could win the Heisman. Could.
What about the GOAT? What about the GOAT, Pac? Is Aaron Mattson? She's not the star on campus?
She's great now. I mean, you're not going to get any argument with me, but I'm talking now big picture, all right? Big picture. I think that if I think that if Aaron walks through campus and Sam Howell walks through campus, I think most people know who Sam is. She's great now. Aaron Mattson's great. And by the way, that field hockey automatic qualifier that we had Friday, by the way, the Deacs did score two, for the record. That was a true and false question.
They did.
And North Carolina, Karen Shelton and company had to go a little bonus time to win the automatic qualifier. And by the way, something happened in that game. I don't know, for folks who watched it, something happened in that whole deal that I've never seen happen before in sports. And right before, and again, Wake Forest is playing for their lives. They got to win to be a qualifier. Otherwise, their season's kaput. See ya. So they knew what was at stake. Right before we went to overtime, sudden victory, the two coaches hugged at midfield. Two head coaches.
Well, that's nice. Jen Averill and Karen Shelton.
I've never seen that before in a competition. I mean, we're talking about, we're going to bonus time. Everything's at stake. And the two coaches, you know, get thumbs up, walked over, gave each other a big hug. I was like, man, you know, I don't know if I've ever seen that in sports. Afterwards, yes. Right before going to overtime, with everything at stake, I've never seen that before. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, there you go. Pretty good.
Just thought I'd point that
great
out.
Respect now. Two longtime head coaches, both done phenomenal things at their schools.
Mm-hmm.
So Aaron Mattson certainly going to get some consideration. Let's go to NC State. This tweet came in because this is one that's interesting. The tweet came in from an account called NC State Football, but it's not the real NC State Football. It's a fan account, if you will. It says, Peyton Wilson is the biggest star on campus because he brings the thunder. Now, here's the thing about Peyton Wilson. Peyton Wilson's a local guy, stayed home to play football, outstanding football player, who has got great fan enthusiasm for him and for their program. So you could say Peyton Wilson. Now, Pack, you could say Alyssa Kunane. Alyssa Kunane on the national level, potentially. All right, right. Certainly with you on that. I mean, take him to the Sweet 16, ACC championship, whole nine yards for Kunane. Now, that's where you are. I mean, the Peyton Wilson offer is not a bad, that's not a bad submission at all. But now you've got, see, the great thing Dave Doran's got is he's got a lot of centric guys from North Carolina, and in particular Eastern North Carolina, who star for his team. Bam Knight, Peyton Wilson. I mean, you got Thayer Thomas, who's a Raleigh guy, who's a fan favorite. I mean, that's where they get a good bit of their momentum. So I understand the Peyton Wilson submission. Now, Alyssa Kunane is unbelievable and a nationally recognized player. But is that the star on campus?
Can I give a shout out to Hannah Steelman?
Sure. Absolutely.
If Hannah's watching, she'll be proud of me.
Hannah, running.
I made it past the mailbox yesterday.
Not running.
Oh, yeah, I did. Past the mailbox. I was in honor of Hannah. Who
you
said,
didn't
hey,
run past
you gotta
the mailbox.
Keep, you
didn't
keep.
Run past the mailbox.
I did. I just told you I did. I ran past the mailbox yesterday. Mail truck dropped something. I had to get it to him.
Mail truck. All right. Notre Dame before we get to the break. Second in the ACC in home runs, Nico Cavadas. I don't know about that one.
I don't know about that.
Jordan Cornette says this is the guy, though. Jordan Cornette offered this one.
Oh, that's Cornette's nomination?
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of Notre Dame baseball real quick, you know, all they do is win 2 of 3, and we probably didn't give this enough love yesterday on the best and worst, because I know you weren't with us yesterday. But the Irish were deep trouble of losing a series. And they were down like 9-1 or whatever it was and came back and won, which ended up winning 2 of 3 against BC after getting thumped 10-0 in the Friday game. Notre Dame baseball is becoming a national story. And Louisville and ND have now kind of cracked the top 10. Louisville's been there basically all year. The Irish, all they do, I mean, it's not really a star power thing. They're just winning, man. It's amazing. It's two out of three every week with the Irish against the ACC opponents. It's really been remarkable. They are a big story along with Pittsburgh. I'm just going to emphasize that again and again and again as we get into May, because you're going to hear a lot about that. We start getting to some serious baseball.
Yeah. There you go. We'll finish this up, by the way, later in the show. When we come back, Matthew Nelson will join us from Florida State. Quick reminder to you, The Huddle is back Thursday night with their draft preview show. Kelsey Riggs with EMAC and EJ. What players could be successful right away in the National Football League? They'll also cover player arrivals and interviews leading into ESPN and ABC's NFL draft coverage. 6 o'clock, draft preview edition of The Huddle, where EMAC and EJ will be the second or third best dressed guys to appear on the screen, because the guys arriving at the draft will be dressed better than they will. That's just the way it goes. All right, stay tuned. Plenty more to come, including the nation's leader in home runs. Does not get cheated at the plate, Pack. Matthew Nelson of Florida State is next from Tallahassee on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday, right here on ACC Network. All right, we're going to go baseball on you, because our next guest makes his debut on this show. And all he does is hit it, and he hits it hard, and it goes a long, long way. Matt Nelson is the catcher at Florida State. He joins us this morning. Matt, first of all, appreciate your time. Man, congrats on the quick start. But, man, you have just been pounding the baseball. What gives?
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. And, you know, it's just luck right now. Playing in some windy cities. We're playing in some windy cities.
I am not letting you get away with that nonsense.
Please. Played in some windy cities. Look, Matt, every game's not at Wrigley Field, dude. I mean, come on now. You you guys as a team, but you in particular, you got 18 home runs, man. You got 25 in your career. And, you know, you basically had last year shoved to the table. So, I mean, the ball gets big, I get it, but you guys offensively, and you're the head of the snake, if you will, you guys have been really good on offense, but you in particular, what's made this year different for you?
Yeah, this season, or this past COVID year, was a big, like, eye-opener to a lot of people. So with that being said, you know, I knew I had some weight to lose, and I ended up losing around 20 pounds, and I was 210 going into summer, came back into school at 185, got back up to 200, but it was a good 200 because I was looking a little dumpy at the end of last year. But then, you know, a lot of things that a lot of people don't teach is the mental aspect of the game and the mental aspect of baseball. So I opened up a few books, one called Relentless Optimism, another one called Psycho-Cybernetics, and, you know, those books really opened up my eyes. I also read the book Teammate by David Ross, another great read. And, you know, one big thing that I learned was, like, and it mentioned in the books is, like, you know, how many people train the mind? How many people train the mental aspect of baseball? It's kind of like an old gym full of cobwebs. And, you know, you can always get an upper edge if you're mentally stronger and mentally better than somebody else. So, I mean, the biggest thing for me, other than the weight loss and getting my body right, was, you know, I get in the box and I tell myself I'm the best hitter every single day, even if I go 0-for-3 with a hat trick or a golden sombrero or whatever the case may be.
All right. I want to talk some catcheries with you. I know that's no such word. I just made it up. but I was watching Fernando Tatis Jr. Beat up on the Dodgers over the weekend, and it was awesome. And so he had all this, you know, as he taken a sneak peek and all that stuff. All right, you're a catcher. All right. I mean, there's a game within the game when you're a catcher, because, you know, you're the focal point, you and the pitcher. So if you get a sense that the batter is taking a little sneak down, you tell me what goes through your head as a catcher if you were in that position, or maybe it's happened to you before, where you got a batter, they're going to get real cute with you, think it's a changeup on the outside part of the plate. So you walk us through this thing. What happens to the catcher? What goes on?
Honestly, like, because I don't call pitches, but the biggest thing with me is just, like, I've always tried to have feel behind the plate and, like, see, I always look at the batter, see if they're trying to peek in, look at the signs or, like, where he's at in the box. And it's kind of just trying to have feel or what they did the at bat before and if they're aggressive early in the count, if they're aggressive late in the count, what they're sitting on or what they're just trying to attack. But, you know, you can see a lot of guys is if they have a really big swing, you can go soft away, hard in, or you can go vice versa. But I mean, I kind of guess it's just more so knowing the hitter in that situation and knowing the situation in general.
Matt, let's swap that to the plate. Same kind of mentality. You said the book was called Relentless Optimism. I want to find that one. That sounds fascinating to kind of unlock things. Everybody's talked about home runs, and on Sunday, you hit one in Atlanta that went 420 in left field with an exit velocity of 110. I don't know about relentless optimism, but they hadn't been many balls hitting that ballpark that far. So when you see it and you hit it, do you know? Do you know off the bat?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Especially with these aluminum bats nowadays, once you really square it up, it's that feeling where, you know you got all of it and you know it's going to go, but, you know, you never know what's going to happen in baseball. You got wind blowing in, you got things that can hang, but once you know it, you know it. But at the end of the day, like, still putting your head down and run, you're not really trying to showboating because it's your team. You're not there to prove it. You're not there to market yourself. You're there to market your team.
Right, but with that said, Speaking of market yourself, we just discussed a little name, image, and likeness. Does that cross your mind down the road that, hey, listen, we're about ready to change the whole landscape of college athletics, and you're playing on a high-profile team in Florida State with great tradition and history? That catcher position, being a San Francisco Giants fan, I don't need to tell you about Buster Posey and all the greats that have played there that have gone on to the next level. Do you give that consideration, big picture? I know it's team first, all that. I get all that. You don't have to give me the coach speak. But behind the scenes a little bit, you do have to think about name, image, likeness, and brand, don't you? Just a little bit?
I mean, yes, but no, because hopefully once that goes into effect, I won't be here anymore. So I really won't have to deal with that on the college aspect of things. So With that being said, yeah. But if that went into rule today or if that went into rule last year, I mean, I'm all for it for all aspects of it, because at the end of the day, like, you know, these guys, like, yeah, we're like, some guys are on scholarship, but some guys aren't. You got to think of the true walk-ons who get full-time starting positions that don't get scholarship money or don't get meal money or anything like that. Like, guys can't have jobs during the season, and some guys have to go work a job, or some guys do Uber Eats, or some guys do Uber or anything like that. So a lot of guys are trying to find ways to make money throughout the season just to keep up and pay rent or even just get food.
Wow. You are draft eligible, and I know you played for the late Roy Halladay in high school down in at Calvary Christian. The impact of playing for somebody who had so much big league success, especially as a catcher, I got to believe just the knowledge he imparted to you in terms of catching had to be immeasurable in what you're using in your college career.
Yeah, no, he taught me a lot, because when I was in high school, I'd always treat all the pitchers the same. I'd try to light them up, or I'd try to spark a fire in them if they weren't, you know, if they were showing that they were, like, emotionally defeat, or if their body language is a little bit down, or if they were angry or something like that. But then he came up to me one day, he's just like, hey, man, you know, it's kind of like teaching. Not everybody learns the same. You gotta talk to some people. You got to baby some people. Some people you can get in like that. But a lot of the other stuff he just taught me is just like, hey, man, it's baseball. It's fun. Just go out there and have fun. And he showed that to me, because he'd heckle the other team sometimes. He was heckling players. He was heckling coaches. And it was honestly probably the best time of my life when he was there yelling at other people.
I want to go back again. I mentioned the Tatis deal over the weekend with the Padres-Dodgers. And you've hit, again, 18 home runs. He's got that little step he gives right before he gets to third base, that little hop-skip thing he's got going on. I sense, given, again, we've never met, this is the first time we've had a conversation, that probably wouldn't go over too well if somebody else was pulling that number on Florida State. That'd be my guess. Would that be accurate?
Yes and no. I mean, some guys are all about the show. Some guys aren't. like I said, it depends on the situation. So if some guys, you know, if it's a tight situation or if one guy thinks he's all hot and whatnot and all of a sudden he does something good, like, hey, man, do your business, get off the field. But we don't have to sit here and we don't have to have a talent show around in the bases. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I sense, though, again, we're just going to play catcher pitcher here a little bit. That guy pulls that stunt. He comes up for the next at bat. I'm sensing something high and in tight. First pitch would be your call if you had a call on that?
Huh? No, we don't do that here. No, we don't do that here.
Hey, it's just me and you. That's just me and you. You and I, listen, we're at the double A. That's what we're doing right now. Double A. So that guy's coming to the plate, Matt. What are we calling?
It'll definitely cross the mind, but we're not going headhunting here.
I didn't say anything about headhunting. I just said a little in tight. Some at the hands.
Yeah.
Just a reminder.
I could work with that.
Okay. That's all I wanted for you. That's all. I just wanted that from me to you. If I'm pitching, you're catching. If that guy lights me up and hits one as far as you do, and he does a little dog and pony show around second, third base, I guarantee you the next time he comes up, it'll be something at the hands. If he can hit it, more power to him.
I could get on that level a little bit, but watching him walk back to the dugout after a three-pitch strikeout would be a lot cooler.
Yeah, I like the way you're thinking. Yeah. You know what? You're a catcher, dude. You're a catcher.
All right, Matt. You used the word dumpy earlier, and that would probably describe Pack and I probably perfectly at this juncture. A little dumpy looking.
Speak for yourself.
Let me ask you. I said, well, you know, we're not where he is. Let's put it that way.
No.
Okay.
Not even close.
You wear 63. How did Matthew Nelson come to wear 63?
This is my favorite question because my freshman year in the ACC tournament, that was what one of our media guys asked me. Stephen McCartney came down and asked me, said, hey, the producers and the announcers want to know why you wear 63. And I said, you want to know the honest answer? And he said, yeah. I said, nobody else wears it. I've worn the number 63 since I was 14 years old. I used to wear 42, and I knew that one day if I wanted to continue to play baseball or if I ever got to play Major League Baseball, I could never wear 42 because of Jackie Robinson. So I thought of two numbers, and the first two numbers that popped in my head were 63 and 71. I have no clue why those were the first two numbers, but I thought 63 was a cool number because nobody else wears it. I've worn 63 ever since, but everybody at the ACC network who talked about the NC State game at the ACC tournament on TV thinks it's because I'm a huge Leroy Selman fan, but Leroy Selman retired before I was even born.
I think 63 might be a good number because that's how many RBIs you're liable to have this time next week. That's how you're rolling, my man.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Is right. All right, listen, I know you're a sports management major, all right? This is a traditional question that we've posed to every student athlete. Since you've been at Florida State, what has been your hardest class?
What has been my hardest class? It's a class that I ended up having to drop my sophomore year. It was political science. I'm not sure why I was put in that class. I'm not sure why I was taking that class, but it was by far the most difficult thing I have ever taken in my life.
And you never saw it again, right?
You know what?
You dropped it, never to be seen again.
No, I got to the second exam, and I said to myself after I walked out of the exam, I said, I'm dropping this class. There's no way I'm going to pass this class.
Hey, Matthew, I got to tell you, my daughter graduated political sci and poli sci public policy from Florida State a year ago. You just missed the wrong class session. That's all. Just needed her in there. She'd have helped you.
She must be pretty smart then.
Yeah, she got out pretty good. Hey, couple things here. One, you're great to visit with. Two, going down the stretch here, how dicey does this get? You guys, the midweek games have been limited. The conference games, it almost doubles on the premium. We know the tournament in Charlotte will be all up for grabs. Do you sense the value of this thing getting a little bigger this year, maybe as opposed to what a normal year might be?
Oh, entirely. I mean, me and Nander, our shortstop, had this conversation the other day. And, you know, our freshman year, we thought about it. And, like, this season is going by a lot slower than what it was our freshman year. Our bodies feel a lot different in the physical aspect than what it did our freshman year. And everything just seems very slowed down and very long. We just finished with school the other day, and we have a month left of baseball left for the regular season. But it just everything feels a lot different, and you know, it's less games too. So that's also kind of weird.
By the way, one more thing for me.
Thanks, Izzy.
I got one more question, and it's kind of one of those freaky years in ACC baseball. But the quality of catching in this league, I mean, listen, you can go four or five guys deep of not good players, great players. Do you ever keep an eye on what's going on? I know you worry about your guys. That's the only thing that's important here. But big picture, the quality of catching in this league, I mean, it really is spectacular.
Oh, it really is. A lot of these teams are doing a great job. They're developing catchers. I know Georgia Tech's a powerhouse for developing catchers. I know Henry Davis is really good from Louisville. He's also a really great guy I got to talk with when we went there. But at the end of the day, I mean, you can't worry about what other people are doing or else you're not going to perform the way you want to. Just worry about your team, worry about yourself, and the rest will take care of itself. But, I mean, yeah, I know there's great catching, but at the end of the day, with the mindset that I've been trying to tell myself, you know, you're the best player out here, you're the best player in the box, you're the best player in the country, best catcher, pitch by pitch every single day, it's second to none once you fully believe that. And when you fully believe and buy into that, you don't even think twice about anybody else.
Got it. Well, keep up the great work,
That's
man.
That's awesome.
You're a joy to watch play. You really are. Tremendous.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
All right. Matthew Nelson of Florida State, old number 63. Appreciate it. That's great. Unbelievable. Don't he forget Florida State and Stetson today, 5 o'clock on the ACC Network. Extra Friday night, ACC baseball. Ooh, a little Commonwealth Cup stuff here. Virginia Tech from Blacksburg. All three games this weekend. Right here on ACC Network and on the ESPN app. Friday night, 7 o'clock, first pitch. Saturday night, 7. And Sunday night at 6. How about that? Commonwealth Cup baseball style in primetime. When we come back, NFL draft starts Thursday night before the weekend's over. The Surratts, hope their name is called. We'll show you the relationship between Chaz and Sage next on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. My man Larry Penley coming up here at top of the hour to lead off the power hour. That will be a blast. But the NFL draft coming up on Thursday, Wes, and there'll be a bunch of ACC eyeballs on that bad boy. There's going to be a lot of ACC players called coming up this weekend.
Yeah. Thursday night first round, and certainly Friday and Saturday. One of the stories we'll be keeping an eye on through the weekend will be that of Chaz and Sage Surratt. Chaz played at Carolina, Sage at Wake Forest. And now they've had the competition. Remember a couple of years ago we had the game where they both played on that Friday night in Winston-Salem at Truist Field. And they supported each other not only through college, but now as they try to realize their NFL dreams. Chaz is ranked in the top 50, Sage around the top 100 of prospects coming up this weekend. And here's a look at the bond of the Surratt brothers.
Carolina, Chase Price back on the field.
I feel a play coming on.
Facing a seven-man box.
Oh, whoa, fumble. We'll take that.
North Carolina recovers. Look at Chaz.
Tar Heels have it, that's Chaz Surratt.
North Carolina linebacker Chaz Surratt and his younger brother, former Wake Forest wide receiver Sage Surratt, were born 14 months apart. Growing up in Denver, North Carolina, their competitive nature was on display from an early age.
When they were about 3 and 4, they were racing on tricycles. So Sage was about to beat Chaz. He refuses to let Sage win, so he picks up the tricycle and, you know, runs to me so Sage won't beat him.
I remember this like vaguely. I never let Sage win at anything, so that sounds right.
I promise you, he's not letting me win at anything. Even to this day, like anything we do, he doesn't only want to beat me, he's like he wants to kill me in it.
The sibling rivalry has continued, including on the football field in 2019 when Wake Forest beat North Carolina. And for once, little brother Sage had bragging rights on Chaz.
Everybody in here is excited for this game, except for Brandy Surratt. She's gonna be so nervous that her babies are about to go head to head.
I was on punt team and he was a punt returner. And he, ended up getting out of one tackle. I dove for him, but I was trying to really just kill him, to be honest.
Another good example of him always trying to just like, just trying to beat me. I had caught a ball on the sideline and I was going, somebody had my ankle and I was going down and he was running full speed and he tried to knock me good. And I didn't notice it during the game, but I went back and watched it on film and I sent it to him. I was like, wow, bro, like you trying to like hit me late after the play.
I was trying to take his head off.
The siblings have not always been on the opposite sides of the ball. Chas played quarterback in high school and during his first two seasons at UNC. But with an eye on his NFL future, he decided to move to linebacker before the 2019 season.
I just like called Sage and was like, I think I'm gonna, you know, go play linebacker. And like Sage knows, like he's known me for so long, like he wasn't really surprised. Like he probably pictured this before I did.
There was no me questioning, like, are you sure? But like, or anything like that. It was just me, all right, well, like, what's the next step? And then just being supportive of him all the way.
Lawrence, gonna get hit by Saran, down he goes!
1 year later, with COVID-19 drastically altering college football, it was Sage's turn to make a decision about his future. Like many players across the nation, Sage was considering whether to play in 2020 or to opt out.
We all sat down and it's funny, like I was making decisions like I was Sage's dad. We pretty much at the end of the discussion felt like the best thing for Sage was, you know, to opt out and go train. And for me was, you know, come back and play.
Just from the information that was presented at the time, we just felt like it was the best decision for me.
I know Sage was like on the fence, but I think he's really loving it. I think he's, you know, looking really good.
I think they both really want to be professional football players. So hopefully they catch somebody's eye and, you know, get a chance at the next level.
Just to, you know, suit up in a, you know, NFL uniform to be able to play football at that high level, I think it's just an honor.
We've always dreamed about this as kids, you know, and actually be living it now, it's kind of like surreal.
Lots of dreams.
Going to be an interesting. Yep. Going to be an interesting weekend for the Surratts, won't it, Pike?
Yeah, for a lot. I mean, not just the Surratts have been terrific with us, and we wish them the best. But there'll be a lot of lives changed Thursday, Friday, and Saturday coming up this weekend.
Yeah. Yep. Some lives changed yesterday. Like the transition there. When Zach Gordon made the putt, Larry Penley won another ACC championship. And when we come back, we visit with the victorious Clemson head coach. And we may even get in a little bit of a time machine, too. Larry Penley trying to write the great farewell story with Clemson golf. We'll do it in a moment. Power Hour on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.